Good morning, members. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Roll call to convene for the fourth day, Friday, January 13th. Allen.
Here.
Baker.
Here.
Barlow.
Here.
Biteman.
Here.
Blackburn.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Bovee.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Clausen.
Here.
Clem.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Court.
Here.
Crank. Dayton, Edwards, Eklund, Ayer, Flitner, Freeman, Furphy, Guru, Gray, Greer, Haley, Hallinan, Halverson, Henderson, Hunt, Jennings, Kinner, Kirkbride, Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Lone, Laux, McGuire, Madden, McKim, Miller, Nicholas, Excused, Northrup, Obermuller, Olson, Paxton, Pelkey, Pieperinen, Ponell, Salazar, Schwartz,
here.
Summers,
here.
Steinmetz,
here.
Sweeney,
here.
Walters,
here.
Wilson,
here.
Winters,
here.
Zwanitzer,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Okay. 59 present, one excused. Thank you, sir.
Can we all rise? Father Caney is going to lead us in the prayer today.
Love your critics. This is Proverbs 10:17. He who heeds instructions and corrections is in the way of life and is a way of life for others. A critic is a person who judges and looks for the good or the bad with everything under the sun. A critic may express an unfavorable opinion, hopefully in a professional way. We can learn from critics and heed their insights and grow and learn. Let us pray. Let us pray that this legislative body will be open to critics and instructions. Help them to see the merit in every criticism so they will grow and be challenged. Every correction that is dealt with patience can be a way of life and a blessing for the people of Wyoming. Amen.
Amen. Father Caney, on behalf of the House of Representatives, we really appreciate you being here and sharing your words of wisdom and praying with us and for us and opening our first week of the session. So we trust you'll keep us in your prayers. Thank you very much. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, House will come to order. Members, just on a note before we go to journal committee reports and read those reports, I think we have somewhat in the order of 135 bills, give or take a few bills in the House. And so all but about 15 of those now will be introduced on first reading. So many general sessions we've had over 400 bills. So we've got 135 bills out there, and I think LSO said there's 120-some more that we need to click accept on or that are somewhere else in the process. So just kind of a reminder and a bill update. So we've got really every bill will be introduced. I've got a few still that I'm working and reading in my office that I haven't gotten kicked out, but we'll get those, most of those on Monday. So that's where we're at in the status of that. So our workload seems kind of light. We haven't fully primed the pump yet, and we're going to have our first second reading today and as we move forward to that. But I anticipate it will pick up. So with that, we are at that order of business of journal committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your journal committee reports that the journal of January 12, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed by the Journal Committee, Representative Garou and Representative Gray.
Now we have a, what is on a second reading, which is kind of a unique message. I don't know that I've heard of a second reading bill on a message from the Senate. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 100. Mr. Speaker, the Senate on second reading indefinitely postponed the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 20, Student Digital Information Privacy, ayes 12, noes 18. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Okay, we have our nurse of the day, Mr. Bryce Bishop from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. Welcome to the House. And we have a unique, with our doctor of the day, of course we always have our representative from House District 32 as our doctor of the day every day, but we also have our Cheyenne Emergency Services have an ambulance, frankly, parked right outside the door. So if any of you have any health issues, those kind of things, and we need to, you know, check your heart rate, blood pressure, those kind of things, which happen from time to time as we all work in this environment, we do have that available as well. Okay, we are at that order of business of introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Okay, the first bill for our consideration is House Bill 75.
House Bill 75, Automatic Restoration of the Right to Vote. Introduced by Representative Byrd.
House Bill 75 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Time out. First reading of the bill.
An act relating to criminal procedure.
House Bill 75 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 118.
House Bill 118, Purchase of Water Rights and Facilities, sponsored by Agriculture, State and Public Lands, and Water Resources.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to water.
House Bill 118 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 121.
House Bill 121, Fishing Licenses. Introduced by Representative Allen.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to game and fish.
House Bill 121 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 4.
House Joint Resolution 4, Anti-Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction Resolution, introduced by Representative Byrd.
First reading of the bill.
A joint resolution recognizing boycott, divestment, and sanction methods against Israel and other World Trade Organization trading partners as unsanctioned practices that discriminate based on national origin and discouraging the state of Wyoming
from entering into a contract with or investing in a company participating in boycott, divestment, and sanction methods.
House Joint Resolution 4 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 123.
House Bill 123, Probate, Estates of Non-Residents, introduced by Representative Greer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to probate.
House Bill 123 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 124.
House Bill 124, Uniform Trust Code Amendments, introduced by Representative Greer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Uniform Trust Code.
House Bill 124 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 125.
House Bill 125, Sealing of Trust Documents, introduced by Representative Greer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Uniform Trust Code.
House Bill 125 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 120.
House Bill 120, Maximum Speed Limit Petition, introduced by Representative Summers.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the regulation of motor vehicles on highways.
House Bill 120 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 119.
House Bill 119, Senior Citizen Districts, Use of Revenues, introduced by Representative Kirkbride.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Senior Citizen Service Districts.
House Bill 119 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Next order of business are reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee, number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 16, Small Claims Appearance Fee, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Baker, Bipton, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponell, Salazar, Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 17, Adult Protective Orders, Time Limit Extension, respectfully reports back same to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Baker, Weitman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponell, Salazar, Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number three, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 19, Sales from Remote Sellers, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Hallinan, Kinner, Larson, Madden, Obermuller, Paxton. Signed, Chairman, Representative Madden. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 20, Honor and Remember the Flag, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 63, Game Animal Licenses Limitations, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Steinmetz. Noes, Halverson, McGuire. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 6, Principle-Based Reserving, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 7, Credit for Reinsurance, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 14, Insurance Code Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 43, Board of Insurance Examiners, Repeal, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
Okay, we're ready. We're on that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill number 4.
House Bill number 4, NRC Agreement State Amendments, sponsored by Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, an act relating to the Nuclear Regulatory Agreement.
House Bill number 4, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? I hear no objection. It is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 38. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 38, School Finance, Interfund Borrowing, introduced by Education, an act relating to school finance.
House Bill 38, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 42.
House Bill 42, Education, State Board of Education Membership, sponsored by Education, an act relating to membership of the State Board of Education.
House Bill 42, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 82.
House Bill 82, Local Optional Sales and Use Taxes, sponsored by Revenue, an act relating to sales and use tax.
House Bill 82, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 25.
House Bill 25, Dry Bean Commission Member Terms, sponsored by Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. An act relating to agriculture.
House Bill 25, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Good morning, 64th. In your inbox is a white sheet. It was blue yesterday, and it will be blue for the rest of the session. At the top, it says agenda summary, and then next line down, it says calendar general file. That's the general file bill, or what we're going to work on general file today, with these following additions. I'm just going to go down the list that you have there and add a few more bills. House Bill 71, we're going to hear first. House Bill 16, House Bill 17, House Bill 6, House Bill 43, House Bill 20, House Bill 19, House Bill 63, House Bill 7, and House Bill 14. I doubt if we're going to get to those last four, but that's the general file list right now. Mr. Speaker, with that, I move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The House is in Committee of the Whole. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you. The Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 71. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 71, Unemployment Insurance, Electronic Communications, sponsored by your Committee, Labor, Health, and Social Services, an act relating to unemployment compensation. Mr. Chairman, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 71, Unemployment Insurance, Electronic Communications, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barlow, Dayton, Garou, Hallinan, Halverson, Lone, McGuire, Sweeney, and excused, Clem. Signed, your chairman, Representative Barlow.
You've heard the reading of the bill. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Barlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 71 do pass. I further move the standing committee amendment and would like to dispose of it immediately with a no vote by the body, as we have a Committee of the Whole amendment that will accomplish better things. So if we could dispose of, and I mean truly dispose of, the standing committee amendment, that would be appreciated, Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the motion for the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Thank you. All those, the question has been called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you for paying attention. The standing committee amendment has failed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Further explanation of the bill and the intent of the bill and then the subsequent committee of the whole amendment, I turn the explanation to the fine new representative from the center of our state, Representative McGuire.
Representative McGuire.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. Fellow members, I'd like to take a quick opportunity to thank my fellow representative from House District Number 3 for giving me the opportunity to create some exciting new law. This is a creation of law as my first shot out of the gun. So we are dealing today with Title 27 of the Wyoming Statutes, which deal with labor and employment. That particular section of the statutes regulates our state agency, which operates under the auspices and in compliance with the federally mandated programs for unemployment. We are in Chapter 3, which is unemployment compensation, and we are dealing with Article 5, employee contributions. At this point, right now, whenever the department wants to correspond with either an employee or an employer, they have to do it through the United States Mail. Obviously, that has become very expensive and is cumbersome, and so they have asked us to amend the first portion of this and to also create a second portion, which will allow them to use email or any other form of accepted electronic transmission to correspond with people. So we have a new amendment, and I don't know if you have it in front of you, but the new amendment is we would go to page 1, line number 14, and start at the end of the line where it says, but only, and we would strike but only, and the rest of line number 15, upon an election by the claimant or employer to receive the, and going on to page number 2, line number 1.
I know it has not been moved. Does everybody have the amendment? Anybody not have the amendment? And Representative McGuire, you have to move the amendment also.
Okay. I would move the amendment at this time.
Close enough.
Okay.
Please proceed.
All right. Going again to starting on page number 1, line number 14, beginning with the language that starts but only, and line number 15, upon an election by the claimant or employer to receive the, going to page number 2, information by electronic transmission, we would move to strike that information and insert the following verbiage. It would say, and this would be going back to page number 1, line 14, unless the claimant or employer elects to decline to receive the information by electronic transmission. We would then move to page number 3, paragraph number C. Now, paragraph number C will be a new paragraph, and if you were to look at 273401, that particular statute deals with displaying the employee rights poster. And so this is going to be a new paragraph underneath displaying the employee rights poster. And we would move to strike the first paragraph after the letter C, where it says a claimant or employer may elect to have determinations and decisions transmitted electronically through an Internet application approved by the department in lieu of the transmissions through the regular mail. Once the election is made by the claimant or employer, any determination or decision required to be mailed to that claimant or employer by this article may be transmitted instead through the Internet application approved by the department, ending on line number 9. We would move to strike that and insert the following language, and that would be, whenever this article requires any determination, decision, or notice to be transmitted through the mail, the determination, decision, or notice may be transmitted by an Internet application approved by the department unless the claimant or employer elects to decline to receive the information by electronic transmission. I would further go on to notice that with regard to the fiscal note, there is no personnel or fiscal impact. However, the department indicates that there will be a major savings in postage, paper, and envelopes. And also I would note that, again, the department has to comply with federal regulations, and the rest of the country is allowing these departments to transmit this information via email. So this language and our amendment falls in line with the federal law.
We are on the committee of the whole, amendment number 1 to Bill 71. Any discussion? Chairman's Wanitzer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I like the amendment, but I guess my question is, it's a pretty substantive change, isn't it, what this committee of the whole amendment does from originally in the bill, it's an opt-in provision, and now it appears, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of a mandatory, you must opt out of doing it electronically. And maybe I'm overemphasizing how significant that is. So maybe if someone would talk me through why the change, why it's necessary, and if it's not going to hurt some businesses who maybe aren't ready to do these kind of things electronically. Thanks.
Representative McGuire, do you have an answer?
That is a very good observation, and yes, at this point, when the language was initially conceived, things were changing over to more of an electronic media, and yes, there still are businesses and there are employees who don't have email, and they can elect not to use email to correspond with the department, but the feeling and the reality is that most of the correspondence is going to be coming in via email, and it will be more of a burden on the agency to deal with and keep records of an elect-in as opposed to an opt-out. And if you can take that as a balancing act, right now there may be a small fraction that will opt out of it. Several years from now, probably nobody will opt out of it. But that's still a record-keeping function that they would have to undergo. And so it takes burden off the agency, and also it streamlines the correspondence.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while I believe that we should go ahead and move this amendment forward, I do have a problem with the distinction that was brought up by the chairman of corporations. I think that is a fundamental shift from a have to opt out rather than an opt in. And quite frankly, you know, when you're dealing with some of these agencies and the volume of work that's there and the people that are involved with it, it's very easy to get missed. And I really don't have that big of an issue having the burden be on the department to go ahead and make the request that someone opt in. I much prefer to see that be an opt-in for the citizen or the people using the service versus the opt-out. That being said, I think that's something, and while we do have second reading, that we could come back in and address specifically there. And so I will be in favor of this amendment on this reading.
Any more discussion on the amendment? Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is exercising what we do in this body. We make policy decisions. And out of committee, we did come out with something different, had a different look to it. And through discussions with the fine representative who brought this committee the whole amendment, I said, this is a good way to exercise our minds, exercise our thought processes, because this does change it. Now, please recognize that the fine representative made amending this amendment quite easily. It's a strike of two words in two places, and you flipped it. So this is not an impossible mountain to climb. We'll have a good discussion if there's a second reading amendment. If this passes, there's a second reading amendment. We'll get to have that discussion, just as the chairman from the Minerals Committee said. So this is a good exercise. This is getting into the meat of what we do in this body. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman.
We are on committee to the whole amendment number one to House Bill 71. What is your pleasure? Thank you. Question being called. All those in favor of committee of the whole number one to House Bill 71, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No?
No.
Division. Oh. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand. And remain standing still. We have 41 people standing. The amendment is passed. Further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill 71, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 71 is passed Committee of the Whole. Representative Hans Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
So be it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, today we have the entire delegation of the Goshen County's commissioners back here in the fishbowl, and I will let Representative Steinmetz introduce them individually.
Welcome, commissioners. So we have our chairman, Carl Rupp. We have Wally Walski, and we have our newest member, John Ellis. So welcome, guys.
And just as a side note, I've known Commissioner Ellis since he and I ran against each other in 2010, and so I'd like to congratulate him on his appointment to the Goshen County Commission. So well done.
Welcome, gentlemen. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, privilege?
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is just a gentle reminder to the body that we need to all park in the back in the church parking lot and not out in front. We've had some concerns from others that we're still parking out front. So if you could do that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 16. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 16, Small Claims Appearance Fee, sponsored by Judiciary, an act relating to small claims procedures. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 16, Small Claims Appearance Fee, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Pawnell, Salazar, Winters. Signed by Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You've heard reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 16 do pass. And I intend to turn the presentation of the bill over to one of our good colleagues from the Gem City of the Plains, whom I don't see in the room at the moment.
Representative Madden volunteered. Does that help?
Okay. It's a complex bill, so we will turn it on to the good representative from District 28.
Lawyers.
My apologies, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Pelkey.
This is essentially a cleanup bill. Right now, under Wyoming statute, there's a $4 fee that's attached to a small claims claim in circuit court. Historically, that hasn't been enforced. We've got another section statute that allows the court to impose a $10 fee. What we'd like to do is eliminate the language that requires this imposition of the $4 fee. And frankly, doing a little bit of research on this matter, we have not found a court in the state that actually imposes it. So I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with recommendation that House Bill 16 pass with a do pass recommendation.
Discussion on House Bill 16. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Pelkey's motion that the Committee of the Whole rises report do so the recommendation that House Bill number 16 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 16 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are now on House Bill 17. The next bill for consideration will be House Bill 17. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 17, Adult Protective Orders, Time Limit Extension, sponsored by Judiciary, an act relating to adult protective services. Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 17, Adult Protective Orders, Time Limit Extension, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Pawnell, Salazar, Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 17 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion for the Standing Committee Amendment. Who's going to explain it?
I can explain it. There is a time limit on page 2 of the bill. In reference to the need for this action to be taken in the first 72 hours, and the amendment makes it so that weekends or holidays do not count as part of the 72 hours.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question or discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 16 or 71, I'm sorry, 617 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the presentation of the bill, I turn you over to the new face of House District Number 11.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this bill is, we're dealing with Title 35, Public Health and Safety, and we're in Chapter 20, which is our Adult Protective Services. This is a bill that provides for an extension on an extension of a protective order. So what happens under this process is if we have a vulnerable adult, we can, a third party can come in to the court and petition for a protective order over that vulnerable adult for up to a 72-hour period for them to receive necessary services for their emergency. And then the original statute allows for a 72-hour extension on that initial protective order. The this bill amends that second 72-hour period to a 30-day period for that vulnerable adult to receive the necessary services to alleviate the emergency. What the bill essentially does, after we heard extensive testimony from the Department of Family Services, is allow the necessary services to continue without the need of the department or whoever this third party is to go in and to the court, repetition, or modify the original order, which is cumbersome, time-consuming, and expensive. So the second 72-hour period just isn't long enough to accomplish the needs. So all this bill does, again, if you look to the bill on page 2, line 9, an amendment from the 72-hour period to a 30-day period. 72-hour period to a 30-day period, excuse me.
There's discussion on the bill. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just have some questions on this because on the fiscal impact, it says that it won't affect the judiciary branch, but the funding for adult protective services is through Department of Family Services, and I'm curious if we reached out to them and if we see what that fiscal impact is on that. And then am I understanding correctly, and I think I am from the good chairman, that these would be vulnerable adults who may have to be just have those services provided for them in their home. For a variety of reasons, but I want to ensure that it wouldn't be any out-of-home placements, and if it is out-of-home placements, Does DFS still cover that, or is that shifted to the Department of Health?
Representative Olson.
Thank you. And to address both of those questions, number one on the cost, this, the way this is, don't confuse this with a Title 25. I guess this is a Title 35. So it's a whole different ball game, and it's a lot less expensive, which answers the second question. It is in-home services. The individual is not at any time removed from their home. The protective order is placed on them. Even in the initial 72 hours, they're in their home receiving mandatory services. So what you can think of this as, maybe it's an individual that doesn't have transportation or running water or something in their home, and they're not able to take care of themselves. Somebody else or the department petitions for the mandatory services, and the department puts the services in place for 72 hours. And if they can't alleviate the problem in the first 72 hours, they want to continue for an extra 30 days to try, up to 30 days, to alleviate the emergency. And the hope is that the individual then seeks voluntary services after that. The cost, if you compare it to Title 25, which is $1,000+ a day, this is nowhere near that. In fact, the line item for this budget is $40,000 annually, and so there's no fiscal impact because they're not spending more than what they already have. They already extend the services beyond the 72-hour period. We're just allowing them a greater window to accomplish their needs without the need to go back to court and modify that order, which takes months in Laramie County and weeks in some of our smaller counties.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was a very good response to the questions from the good representative. I would add that the agency representative said he's got $40,000 to spend on it this year. He's not sure whether that's going to work or not. He said if it doesn't, he'll need to come back and make an adjustment in the year to come. But he thought, by and large, it would take care of it.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I just have a question. I was wondering if you knew what the volume of use of this is. In other words, how many cases do you see typically in this area? Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the intent here is to try to keep people out of the 25 or Title 25 system and to cut down on other costs. But I do have a concern when we go from, you know, we talk about mandatory services being inserted in somebody's home, and we better have a very good governmental reason for that, a compelling interest for the government to protect our elderly, and I'm fine with that. And so 72 hours, now not including weekends, and then we had the option, if the court found that we needed more time for another 72 hours, okay, I'm going with that. But now we say up to 30 days. 30 days that we have now inserted government into somebody's life, hoping that they will then wise up and take the services voluntarily. So just want us to think about this. This 30 days seems like an awful long time. I also have found in my life that if you give somebody 2 days to accomplish a task, they accomplish it in 2 days. If you give them 20 days, it takes them 20 days. So those are my comments on the bill.
Thank you, Chairman Greer. Chairman Barlow, do you have a question? Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the previous comments. Let me just point out that you'll notice on page 2, line 2, that it starts off on an emergency basis. And so there's discretion made as to whether or not this constitutes an emergency. Once they figure out whether this is an emergency or not, they also can try to figure out what is the best way to serve the patient, the individuals there. Right now, they constantly have to go back to court again and again and again and again, all on an emergency basis, which is very complex and leaves it at that heightened state. But sometimes what they find is that the individual could be better helped by leaving them in place, which is the intention of this bill, by leaving them in the home, by providing for the providing services and assisted living care that would actually best serve that individual. Sometimes the initial emergency, once it's over, if you could at least maybe even restore heat or something like that to that individual's home, you're going to take care of the issue there. And so this is actually trying to provide for services as opposed to confinement. It actually leaves the individual in their home with services rather than the way it is now with confinement. Now, the question as to whether it's a continual 72 hours, what happens is you're having to show up in front of that judge over and over and over again. And the person many times gets sent out of the system and instead of receiving what they actually need. And so this actually provides for that first, and the good representative from just to the north of me was talking about, yeah, you need to put some time constraints on there to make sure that you get something done. That's the reason why we wanted to leave the original 72 hours in there, except for weekends and such. But then the second one, to provide continuing assisted living and so on, that one needed to be lengthened. We received testimony in committee over this interim that they had debated whether they wanted 30, 60, or 90 days. And one of the individuals that came to us said that they just picked the one in the middle. What we chose to do is actually put that at the 30-day mark because we felt that that would be a better length of time. Anyway, just to try to help clarify some of that.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. appreciate the testimony. I'm favorable toward this bill. I think the intent is good. I, too, question that 30-day period, however. And it kind of begs the question. We hear it's because they have to go to court and it's cumbersome and all of this. But maybe for those in the committee who heard testimony, how often are they going to court? I mean, could this be shortened to even a week? Or 2 weeks instead of 30 days? I mean, are they going to – I guess I want to know the frequency of how long they're going to court because that really can determine the appropriate length of time. So if we could hear some testimony on that.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I can answer that as well. There were two reasons why we chose that particular length of time. The first 72 hours demonstrated the fact that this is an emergency basis. But afterward, they were talking about there are times where proceeding through getting all the documents together with for the courts, it takes more than 72 hours. There needs to be an adequate length of time. And also, we're trying to provide services where an individual may need help longer than a week, for sure, to try to get them squared away. And not only that, this bill received a lot of testimony from all the different individuals involved, whether it's in the courts, through the judges, prosecutors, attorneys, all the DFS, and with all of that collective input, this was felt to be a nice sweet spot.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just have a quick question here that I'd like to maybe be addressed is, we see we've heard the number of potentially $40,000 being thrown around here, but my question is how many of the cases that we're talking about here have exceeded the current statutory 72 hours and then the additional 72 hours? We're talking 6 days already. I guess I'd like a little bit of clarification as to how many cases we've seen go beyond what we've already got in statute.
Who would like to clarify that? Chairman Kirkwright.
I don't know if I can, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I can clarify that, though it is a good question. We are talking about people who can't take care of themselves in an emergency situation. So that's a little hard to put a timetable on that. So I think we put a higher time limit rather than a shorter one on which they might receive care. You'll notice on page 2 in lines 10 and 11, the person themselves who's being cared for can opt out of this at some point if they want out. So we're not holding them against their will. But it's also been suggested if the issue here is the time, the 30 days thing, that's something that can be discussed and debated on a second reading and possibly changed. So I wouldn't knock this one in the head just over the 30-day portion of it.
Representative Olson? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Henderson.
Mr. Chairman, the last speaker made me think about requesting a clarification on the term vulnerable. If the adult is vulnerable and can request to opt out, I'd like to understand better the use of that application of vulnerable.
Representative Olson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, just to address, I'm going to address a few things here. And one, there was a question raised from a good representative about the volume that we deal in these cases. And I don't have an answer to that, and I don't believe we heard testimony on that, but I will get that certainly for the body before the second reading. I think that's important. I would like to reiterate what was said by Chairman Kirk, or excuse me, by the chairman about the 30-day period being workable, and it is very workable. We asked repeatedly from the Department of Family Services, from the good doctor who oversees that division, what time period do you want? What works for you? And we didn't get a solid answer. Instead, the answer that we repeatedly got from DFS was that the current 72-hour period, the extension, is not long enough to wrap up the services that they often need when they need an extension. And then next, I just touching again on that 30-day period, I want everyone to keep in mind that this is not a process that automatically happens with the flip of a switch. The second extension, the 30-day period, still requires a petition be filed with the court. And a judge's signature must exist on that an order extending 30 days. It doesn't automatically happen. So the judge will review the request for the petition. They'll have to meet the requirements to prove that an emergency still exists, that the individual is vulnerable, and they'll need to outline exactly what it is they will provide in terms of services to alleviate the emergency. Now, when we're talking about vulnerable adults, we are talking about cases, it's just pretty extensive. It can be neglect, self-neglect, exploitation, et cetera. Again, it could be something down at a level of no water, no electricity, to a heightened level. These individuals are not placed in custody. They're in their home. If they choose to refuse services, they most certainly could, and they themselves can be a party to the petition to amend if they don't believe they need services. So I just don't see a loss of liberty on the bill.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a few points of clarification based on previous questions. I also want to direct you on page number 2 to line number 8. We did add two words in there. This is not an automatic 30 days. It just provides for up to an additional 30-day period. Secondly, we received testimony during the interim that these cases, because someone was asking the question, how often did these cases come up? And the good representative that spoke just before me said that he would try to get some data for you. But I do recall asking that of the agency, and they said that they were rather infrequent. The other thing I want to point out, too, because the question was how this would be paid. They only have a $40,000 budget in this particular area. And they felt comfortable with that because they are payers of last resort. There are federal programs. I know we're not supposed to call them by their proper names, but there are federal programs that do take care of this. So what they do, they're able to get in there, help the patient. They're able to get repayment from the federal program, and we are payers of last resort.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so as a recommendation that House Bill number 17 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
House Bill 17 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for consideration is House Bill 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 6, Principle-Based Reserving, sponsored by corporations, elections, and political subdivisions. Mr. Chairman, your committee, number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 6, Principle-Based Reserving, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Chairman Zwanitzer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so, the recommendation that House Bill 6 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. And if it pleases the chair, maybe I could just give about a one-minute primer on Wyoming insurance law before delving into the bill.
That sounds great.
Thanks. So, brothers and sisters of the 64th, maybe many of you know, maybe you don't, but insurance is state-based. It's state-regulated, and almost all laws related to insurance are at a state level, which is kind of great because the feds can't tell us what to do with our laws. However, it does get complicated in the fact that we have 50 states and territories all having their own sovereignty over insurance, and things can get complicated sometimes. So many decades ago, states came together. We formed what's called the NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and this group oversees uniformity among state laws on insurance to make sure that we have commerce and business and things can freely move between state lines. So, basically how the NAIC works is they have an accreditation program. So they oversee model laws that each state passes, and that's how we get accredited. Wyoming's had our accreditation since 1993. We're very proud of that. And many members of this body in former years will remember sometimes we have bills before us that are 100 or 200 pages that deal with billions of dollars that don't necessarily affect Wyoming, but to maintain our accreditation and maintain this model framework of laws across the country, we're asked to pass some of these bills. The good news is today you'll see in House Bill 6 and House Bill 7, these are model acts to keep our accreditation, but they are also actually relevant to Wyoming. So if anybody has questions on insurance law, basically come see me anytime. I will overwhelm you with information. But with that, Mr. Chairman, let me go back to House Bill 6, PBR, or principle-based reserving specifically. This is a bill that does have a trigger mechanism. And so when 42 states, if you look at page 2 and 3, this bill actually goes into effect when either 3/4 of the states, or 42, or 75% of the direct premiums being hit, triggers this bill to go into effect. And actually in 2016, the bill went into effect without Wyoming when they hit the 75%. Wyoming has 0.1% of direct premiums, so it doesn't necessarily affect us, but it does affect us that every other state is now going to start using this system, and we have to get on board because there are only 4 states left, including us. So quickly to run through the bill, I'll just go by sections, and if anybody does have specific questions, I'll try to give you some more information. But it really is a kind of a fascinating bill that does some cool things. So if we start on page 2 and 3, you'll see that this is when the trigger mechanism happens, when we've hit either 3/4 or 75%. But the real bill starts on page 3 there in line D, and pages 4 through 7 go through guidance. And so when this law comes into effect, this basically guides our insurance commissioner on how to keep our accreditation and be on balance with every other state. On page 7 and 26.6-10, these are all the defining requirements. These go from pages 7 through 10. And so in a nutshell, what it does is says all policies will start using PBR as evaluation method starting January 1st of 2017. But because these are 3-year, very complex calculations, I think only 15 out of the hundreds and hundreds of insurance companies are using this method right now. This gives a 3-year phase-in, so all the insurance companies can start using this valuation method on their reserves in better order to better, hopefully give better rates when they don't have to have so much money in collateral for loans. But what it does say is then January 1st, 2020, everybody's got to be on board. All the valuations have to work this way, and so insurance companies have 3 years to comply. Again, going to page 10, if I could jump ahead, in 26.6-11, this is actually one of the most important parts of the bill. This is on data reporting for policies and contracts. So you'll see on top of page 11, lines 1 through 3, this says an insurer shall submit mortality, morbidity, policyholder behavior, and expense experience in the valuation manual, which is a whole lot of aggregated private information. So in those 3 sentences, then you have pages 11 through 17, which go over everything that deals with confidentiality to make sure we protect that information, both in Wyoming and in every other states. So this would be your, basically when actuaries work, this is the actuarial data that they rely on to make policies. And so we would consider them trade secrets, for lack of a better term, in Wyoming. Now the only, there's lots of interesting stuff in 11 through 17, but maybe the one interesting thing, which is kind of counterintuitive, is if one of these companies does release this data, for whatever reason, they're a smaller company or they want to release it to the public for a reason, then the confidentiality laws go away. Because if the company is going to release it publicly, you know, the insurance department is under no further mandate to keep it confidential. Then going over to page 18, this is a single state exemption. This would say, similar to some other laws, if the domestic insurer is in Wyoming and they don't have policies outside of Wyoming, this law doesn't apply. We don't currently have any domestic insurers in Wyoming, but if we ever did, we would have a single state exemption like we do for other model laws. That's the new language in the bill. Starting on page 19, this would be the amendments to current law. Pages 19 through 22 are just the current standard valuation law, saying our former, the PBR is now the standard, I guess is the best way to say it. Moving on to page 23, this would also basically say in 26.6.202 that any policy issued previous to PBR is now in effect. You can think of it as like a grandfather clause for all the current policies. And that runs through, let me see how quick I can turn pages, to page 27. 26.6.203, basically pages 27 through 33 are primarily wordsmithing, just some updates to go along with the Model Act to keep PBR effective after the date of the act, but also every grandfathered clause in effect before. And it has to kind of go both back to current law as well as the new law to keep everything going. Page 33 is on 26.6.208, when we have the actuarial opinion of reserves. All of this does, and it's a little complicated, but at the very basic level, you'll see in the repealers, we take out A through F, so we repeal pages and pages of state law, and we basically are renumbering them starting with G, but it's the exact same law. So although it looks like the next 8, 9, 10 pages are all new law, this is actually found if you, I'm going to let you jump all the way to the back to page 47, you'll see in section 3, we're repealing 26.6.202 and 26.6.208 A through F. So we've repealed all that here. We've added all new language in G to keep in compliance with the Model Act. You will see this act is effective immediately. If you read page 2 and 3 of the bill, the act actually went into effect nationwide starting in January. The good news is Wyoming doesn't have, we do PBR evaluations at the end of the year. So as long as we pass this act immediately or in the next couple of months, our valuation is going to happen at the end of the year. Same with everybody else, and we'll still be on board, and things will be good. I'd be happy to try to answer any specific questions. Seeing that I have one already, I'm kind of excited.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize, this may not actually be a relevant question. I just advised a new member that if they ever wanted to submit a controversial bill, they should try to run it through corporations, because we'd all assume it was so boring we wouldn't pay attention. And so I admit I may not have been fully paying attention. On page 11, where you talked about the experience data reporting for the policy and contracts, and maybe I missed if this is only for life insurance policies, but if it's for the health, I'm wondering whether there's any kind of overlap between the submission of the insurer's information and what we have separately in previous sessions considered doing with the multi-payer claims database and that information, if you could just address that.
Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The quick answer is I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I will definitely look. So members, the fun thing about insurance in our body is it goes to two different committees. Property and casualty tends to come to corporations. Health insurance generally goes to the Labor Health Committee. And so, as your corporation's chairman, I'm not always exactly sure what the other committee has done in regards to health insurance, but I will look. But under ORSO and our Holding Company Act and all of the other model acts, it's the same type of confidential information. But I will look for the good representative and let her know as soon as I get an answer.
Further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises report it, do so that recommendation that Bill Number 6 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill Number 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are on 43. The next bill for House Bill 43, the next bill for our consideration, House Bill 43, the meeting clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 43, sponsored by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, Board of Insurance, Examiners, Repeal. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 43, Board of Insurance Examiners Repeal, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Chairman Zwanitzer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the committee of the whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 43 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment I would move at this time, and I will let the good representative from House District 44, there's a poll in my way, discuss both the standing committee amendment and the bill.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse the interruption. I've just been handed the standing committee amendment, which I seem to have forgot. But, yes, Mr. Chairman, if it's the pleasure of the chair, I'll go through the bill first and then dispense. I'll dispense with the standing committee amendment first, and then we'll go through the bill if that pleases the chair.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The standing committee amendment inserts inside the bill on page 2 after line 17, I'll paraphrase it here, about the panel members and their terms and basically what they're going to serve on this committee or on the panel. And that's really all it is. It's just a little continued definition. So with that, I would stand for questions on the standing committee amendment.
Question being called, and you've heard that excellent description of the standing committee. All those in favor of the standing committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The standing committee amendment to House Bill number 43 has passed, been adopted. We're back under the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the chair would allow, I will proceed with a brief explanation of the bill.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What House Bill 43 does is what we all attempt to do in government is make government a little bit smaller, a little bit more efficient. What we are doing is we are getting rid of a board of examiners and replacing that with a review panel. So real quickly, it does change some licensing requirements, the way we do licensing. So stepping through the bill, we've got Section 1 that has licensing examinations, the review panel. It tells the rules of what the commissioner should do in regard to this. It describes that the commissioner should establish a review panel, etc., which is fairly straightforward, gives the terms of those individuals and what their general tasks are. If we can skip down through this, it also, let's skip down to Section 2, which is the application, which is a little bit of a change there. I am on page 4, by the way, for those of you that are trying to keep up. The application for examination, the original act was written in 57, and really hasn't been updated much since then, and so since then we've gone to a lot of electronic versions of it, which have streamlined the process. So basically what we're doing here is allowing for these tests to be administered electronically and the results to be distributed electronically, basically just bringing us into the current century. What it does is it cuts the cost of overhead, reduces some people. We don't need the board. That's why in the middle of this we are repealing a couple sections that are no longer necessary that have to do with the commissioner's ability to collect fees and the boards and some of their duties. So, in essence, we're streamlining this whole process. And at that, I would stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions or discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? We passed the standing committee. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so the recommendation that House Bill number 43 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Nay. House Bill 43 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 20. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 20, sponsored by Representative Barlow, Honor and Remember the Flag, an act relating to the display of flags. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 20, Honor and Remember Flag, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garrew, Haley, Halverson, McGuire, Steinmetz. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 20 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And for the explanation on the bill, we have the good representative from House District 16 from the land of the beautiful mountains.
Representative Garrew.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have before you today House Bill number 20. And if you would, indulge me, in your inbox there has been a handout delivered regarding this bill. What the bill does, Mr. Chairman, is very simple. It allows a flag to be flown underneath our nation's flag in all state and government-owned buildings at the local level and here at the state level. The flag itself is what the essence and what the importance is of this bill. And the standing committee member, or the standing committee amendment speaks to that directly. And if I can just read from that, it says, as a symbol of gratitude and respect of the ultimate sacrifice made by the members of the United States military in service to our nation. The flag is the honor and remember flag that, like I say, you have a handout on, and the intent is to fly that flag if the political subdivision so desires, to fly this flag underneath our nation's flag. So with that, that's a simple explanation of the bill, and I'd be happy to stand for questions.
You've heard the explanation and the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment? Oh. Let's see. Is it Chairman or Representative?
Neither. Either way.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to think of the proper way to ask some of these questions, but if you'll indulge me just a minute, Mr. Chair, when I look at our flag with the stars and stripes, to me, that represents everything that this country represents, the freedoms, the liberties, the opportunities, as well as the sacrifices that are made to make this country what it is and what it has been. And so I guess the question I've had, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, it's just the question. It appears that when to hang a separate flag under the flag that represents everything that this country represents to somehow dilutes the meaning of our stars and stripes. Now, I may be wrong, but I'm just wondering why I have to have another flag there to help me remember the sacrifices, you know, of all of the lives that have been made for the freedoms that we enjoy in this country. I thought that that's what the symbol of the stars and stripes was all about. So if I could, and, you know, I'm a little embarrassed that I've never seen this honor and remember flag before, and so you'll have to excuse me on that part. So if you can help educate me a little bit, so as I vote for or vote against that, I kind of have a feeling of what the intent was and why we need to do that to enhance something that I thought traditionally was covered by the stars and stripes. So if you could help me, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Garrew?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I appreciate the question, and I couldn't agree more with the intent and meaning of our national flag. What this flag does, I believe, and if you look at it in the handout, it portrays it, I think, very well. The colors itself from the national flag, the gold star to represent gold star families, of which there are 176 in Wyoming, and the honor and remember symbol with the trifold flag. It's just a further remembrance and to highlight the ultimate sacrifice that has been made by these families and by these men and women in our armed forces. And once again, I would remind the body that it is a permissive, not directive bill. It is totally up to the option, not unlike another flag that you see flown quite often for POWs and MIAs that you see flying in a lot of our courthouses and a lot of our civic buildings. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions or discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 20, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been passed. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill number 20, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 20 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration will be House Bill number 19. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 19, Sales from Remote Sellers, sponsored by Revenue, an act relating to sales tax. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 19, Sales from Remote Sellers, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Hallinan, Kinner, Larson, Madden, Overmuller, Paxton. Signed, Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 19 do pass, and there are no amendments from committee. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, to give you a little background on where this came about, we have to look kind of at the genesis of what efforts have been done since basically 1994 to collect taxes that are due, rightfully due, the state. To further give you some background, we have the state sales tax or excise tax, but the excise tax is really divided into a sales tax for purchases that are made in the state versus the use tax, which are purchases that are made outside the state and are due from the purchaser vis-a-vis the use tax, and it's equal to the excise tax. Okay. Since the first beginning of internet sales, in I think it was 1994, this has grown every year for a variety of reasons, and as of right now, we estimate. Or it has been estimated, the committee didn't estimate this, but it has been estimated that somewhere between $70 and $90 million a year in sales use tax has been assessed but not been collected. What this Bill number 19 does is work as kind of a corollary to what we have done over at least the last 10 or 12 years with the streamlined sales tax effort that the majority of the states in the United States are members of that also have a sales tax. And what they've done over the past is come up with the easiest way possible for non-local sellers to collect taxes on behalf of the state of Wyoming that are due from the customers of these remote sellers. And that means that when they have a potential sale, all they have to do is hit one button and it tells what the appropriate tax is, given the taxing jurisdiction that the seller or the buyer is from. Okay. And this has been moderately successful. We bring in, you know, a number of millions of dollars by a number of internet sales people that voluntarily subscribe to this and use the service of this streamlined sales tax organization. And it's done from literally one ocean to the other. There's states, I think I should have got the exact number, but I know there's more than 30 states that are using this. And what this bill, House Bill 19, is kind of a spinoff of the Marketplace Fairness Act that one of our senators has been involved in for years and years. And this bill has been, you know, just like everything else in Washington, has been stalled for a long time. States have now decided that the best way to proceed with this is along the lines of exactly what you see in House Bill 19. And in House Bill 19, what we're doing is kind of bringing it to the next forefront and saying, look, you know, these are taxes that are due. Times have changed since 1992. And that we outline a set of procedures that will, at one point, hopefully, bring about a court decision on the validity of our use tax. And the kind of testimony you expect that we would hear is just, or I should say that we did hear, is just what you'd expect, that we have an imbalance, we have an unfairness if we have one set of people in the marketplace that don't have to pay the tax and another set that do. So what this is a system of what we expect will happen or what should happen as far as bringing this to a head. It's already had some impact in other states. This particular bill that you have in front of you is modeled after a bill that was done a year ago in the Rushmore state, okay? And we took that bill and used it as a model because of its success. And you might have heard about some of that success in the, as just being residents of the area. But they have, as a result, there's been dozens of remote sellers that have voluntarily applied for a sales tax license. And that's what's really required. If you look at Romanette A in here, that they need to collect purchase a sales tax license and collect sales tax. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's exactly because of this bill becoming in front of the legislature, but I guess the largest internet seller in the United States, there was a press conference yesterday or the day before by the governor that said that, you know, that there's an agreement now that this seller will purchase a sales tax license and they will start collecting the sales tax even before this law is officially on the books because of the process it takes to get through the legislature. So that basically explains the efforts behind the bill, and it's got a number of protections in it, and I guess at that point, or at this point, I can open it up if there's any questions.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the intention of the bill. I do have a couple questions, though, and part of it's because I believe what has possibly held this up in the past is the fact that it's run headlong into the Interstate Commerce Clause. I was wondering if there was any discussion in the committee as to whether or not this may involve a legal dispute on the subject, and how we would go through that. Secondly, I noticed on page 2, lines 13 through 16, you set the threshold for this at around $100,000. It seems just a little on the low side, only for one reason, if we were to go this direction, primarily because sometimes there are small firms, but they're making very expensive pieces of machinery for, let's say, drilling, things like that. They could get awful close to that $100,000 mark very quickly and still be a small firm that wouldn't be able to absorb some of the cost that may be involved with assessing the tax. And so I'm wondering if that should be set higher. But I would like to hear from some of the testimony you would receive based on the Interstate Commerce Clause as well. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is nothing that we discussed on the Interstate Commerce Clause, and as far as I know, it doesn't relate to that. What it does relate to is a decision that was made by the Supreme Court, however, in 1992, but it didn't involve interstate commerce. It just said that at that time, given the technology that was available, that it was a undue burden on vendors at that time, and especially small vendors. It was in the court proceedings. So that part is, kind of recognized with the $100,000 the $100,000 sales threshold. So that we're not dealing with small firms. Now, if you look at a remote marketer, all right, a remote firm, $100,000 in Wyoming, given our and adjusting it for population, I think that the threshold effectively for the country is like $40 million. I think that was the number that they used in committee this morning. So they're big companies, and we had testimony from a representative that was there that said that there's only 40 or 50 firms that have that large a volume. And these are the ones that we're really interested in. These are the ones that are causing an erosion of our excise tax base. And after all, excise taxes are extremely important for the state, but they're even more important for municipalities, as we heard this morning. So I hope that answers the question, and that's the history of it.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess some of the questions I've got in regards to, this isn't just happening in our great state, but in regards to nationwide, when we're looking at these online sellers, could they face audits and changing tax rules in thousands of taxing jurisdictions as they change throughout the nation? And then secondly, was there any testimony given on the case that's happening with the Rushmore State, where they're supposedly going to be going to the U.S. Supreme Court to have this decided? And does this seem a little premature, considering that we might not end up on the right side of a Supreme Court decision? Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, I want to go back to my my friend from the South. One of the questions he raised was about firms or industry or anybody reaching outside to purchase or acquire goods. I can tell you from my experience is when you're doing that, and those retailers or wholesalers, or in some cases where they're manufacturing material to come in to be put into use in Wyoming, they collect sales tax under that. They're making sure that they're not getting audited, because remember, we have sales tax, but we also have use tax. So if you're buying things from out of state, you as a consumer are supposed to pay the tax to the state. So by having this sales tax there, where we're collecting it up front, we're just trying to take some of that burden. And something I always like to do here is make sure I got laws in place that help me not be a criminal or help me not violate the law. But really, we're not hurting industry with that, because that is already going on. That is already the standard.
Representative Madden.
the And I think that's a good answer and follow-up to what I said a little bit ago. The other question was, is this a premature or something? And that's exactly not the case, that it's not premature. And there's a number of states that have taken the same action, and that's really what the ultimate end of this is to have a declaration from the Supreme Court that this is appropriate now. And, you know, there's a lot of indications that the Supreme Court, I guess it's all right to talk about that, but they want to have some action brought to them so that they can update what was done in 1992, because things have changed. And that's, you know, it very well may happen that we might be joining in a suit, but that's way too soon. But now is the right time to do it, not the wrong time. We want to be in on the forefront of this.
Representative Jennings.
Mr. Speaker, I was on the committee for this, and I actually voted for it to get out here to be heard, because I think it's a very important topic, and it's a tax that's not being collected. But I have very serious a question first, of, and I asked this in committee. Who collects this out of country? You know, who goes overseas and collects this? And the other thing that I heard in this that's very disturbing to me is that now we're going to be an arbiter. We're going to go after it. Well, these are just large companies. As a body, do we want to pick and choose where we apply the law? I mean, it just doesn't seem right that we should pick one group of people and say, we're going to apply this taxation to you, but we're not going to apply it to someone that goes below this threshold. So I have those concerns. Like I said, my question would be, do you see this addressing anything for outside the country also?
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to go back to the question posed by our vertically enhanced legislator that asked whether or not we were premature in going forward when there's the possibility of lawsuits and that there are lawsuits elsewhere. And I asked that exact question in committee today. And the answer from our director of the DOR was no, because going back to, as the good chairman of the committee talked about, that the reason for the lawsuits is based on a 1992 Supreme Court decision. And that decision, and that's, think about that. I mean, that is so long ago that major retailer where we used to just get books from and now we can get everything from, right, wasn't even in existence in 1992. And so that Supreme Court decision was all about the burden that would be placed on these companies and was very concerned about the burden of having to pay attention to all, they talked about 10,000 different tax codes between the states and the local communities. So that was the concern. And the answer, so that we wouldn't be in violation of the Supreme Court, is we have completely reduce the burden on companies, that it is easy for them to recognize what kind of tax would need to be paid to the state and localities. And so that we would not be in violation of that law. And so, you know, this is America. All of us can sue. Any of us can sue, whatever we want. But the reality is we have taken care of that concern in what's called the Quill decision in our Department of Revenue right now. So I was comfortable that going forward that either we won't be sued, right, and this, first of all, I'm in favor of this bill. This is a good, fair thing that we need to do, that if we were sued, we would win because we've met that burden. So, thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and for this bill as well. And again, as a past member of the Revenue Committee, I just want to share a couple of the thoughts that I had. One, I was initially concerned because as a small business person myself, I could visualize that, as the question was, you know, what is my paperwork going to be to try to comply with all this stuff? And, you know, modern American technology just that enables people to buy. This wasn't actually brought up, but we heard in committee over the interim that the department has a contract with vendors that sell the IT software. Well, no, that actually, let me take that back, that provide the IT software to these out-of-state vendors who have put in for the sales tax license, and the cost for that comes from the department's collections. So there is no cost to the vendor out of state for complying with, you know, 50 states and however many territories and when there's a tax holiday and all that stuff. That's in the computer system. It has no effect to them at all. So that was a very great reassurance. As far as the $100,000, I would remind us that those of us who are consumers, the obligation is on us. So we're not attempting to harass some particular level of seller. You know, when you serve on department on the Revenue Committee, you find out a number of laws that perhaps you were not complying with previous to your time on the committee. And to my dismay, I now realize that next summer when I purchase a park home from out of state, I will have to go on the department website and print out a form and send in a check, and I'm sad to do that, but now that I've been on the committee, I really can't justify ignoring that obligation, which we all have already, but you have to admit that probably 99% of the people who buy from somewhere else don't do that. So that's on us, and that's, I think, who should be paying. And just one last thought that came to my mind a couple years ago, and I think it's really worth bringing up because a lot of times on this bill, people put it as some sort of a fairness between the Main Street vendor and the online vendor and such like, which is true. But the thing to really think about is why are we paying sales tax? I mean, as a buyer, when you buy something, the sales tax goes a little bit to the general fund, but to cities and towns. And so your sales tax money is paying for your city's roads and law enforcement and fire and streetlights. And so if your neighbor were to do all their shopping in town and pay their sales tax, and if you were to do all your shopping online, which nowadays you could, I mean, you could buy your clothes, your furniture, your food, everything you want online, then you would basically be living off their sales tax collections, and you would be getting your city's services at no charge to you because you've been basically shopping online, and perhaps some of us have been neglecting to send in our sales tax. So I think it's a matter of fairness as citizens that how we shop now, which is really different from how we shopped 15 years ago, that we should all hold up our end. So I hope those answered some questions.
Representative Locks.
Mr. Speaker, rising to speak on and in favor of this bill, and I'll be real quick and short. The timing is correct for this, and I also am, there's a whole lot of former Revenue Committee members in this room, and we've talked about this bill for quite a while. It really is necessary. It's necessary to go forward, and the idea of it being too complicated to report is totally not the truth anymore. Look what happens with software companies and what they can do. To me, this is very critical for a revenue stream for the state. As we all know, that excise tax, use taxes are have gone way down, and there's one reason it's gone down. And we need to either be able to get those revenues in or come up with another plan down the road where we don't even have a sales tax and have a tax of a different sort on a neutral basis against that. But this is really important, and we need to get it through, and we need to be involved in that for the health of our state with our revenues that should be coming in and aren't. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative McGuire.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Just talking about the mechanics of it, having owned a retail facility or retail store, and we did online sales, we simply collected sales tax uniformly no matter where we sent something out. And the reason being is it simplified it on our end, because when you have a sales tax audit, and those of you who have been in retail, you know how pleasant those are. When the auditor comes in, they want to see how much sales tax you brought in, and they look, and if you collected it for a different state, They look at the rate for that state, which is very simple to find, and they had better see proof that you sent that sales tax off to that state. So mechanically, it's very easy to do, and most other states, they police very closely their retail sellers to make sure that they are collecting sales tax out of state and are remitting that sales tax to the state that it came from. Thank you.
Representative Larson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm a member of this committee. We voted on it this morning. I was reluctant to bring it out, voted to get it out here so we could talk about it. I do just want to let everyone know I had heard that the department head was had the Attorney General looking at this bill, and I would expect that there ought to be an amendment coming on some wording, especially on page 4, lines 4 through 16 is what I had written down. So I'll probably vote to get it to go a little further, but I'm hoping for some amendment.
I'm sorry, Representative Crank.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to go on record that I am for the bill. However, I do have a problem with the stuff on page 2 about the $100,000 exemption. I think a percentage is a percentage. You charge it to everybody across the board. Fair is fair. There's no sense in picking and choosing who you're going to assess this to, and that would be the only comment or change I would like to see on it moving forward. Thank you.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also offer a concern on page 2, and it would be between lines 13 and 20, and this is the or. So on the first component, we have a dollar amount, exceeding a dollar amount. The second one, we have a transactional amount. And if the transactions are in excess of that number, but they're of a very small amount, then we do have a big, this could have a significant disparity between that one and two. So I think that's something that gives me a little pause, not with the concept of the bill, but with the mechanics of the bill. Secondly, I guess I would ask that on the final page of the bill, that's act effective immediately, it seems like when we do, certainly I understand that maybe the technology, everything is there, but it takes time to get people up to speed. So I would think that an effective date of our standard effective date or of a January 1st effective date, which is often what the department uses when they assess sales tax, et cetera, would be appropriate. So effective date, I think, has some challenges as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another question on the bill. I've been waiting for this, but I haven't heard it. Some of these online retailers sell food, and are they going to, like the one that was just announced yesterday, the day before, are they going to charge sales tax on food over the Internet? How are they going to be able to figure out what we tax and what we don't tax?
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That question is easily answered. The streamlined sales tax has a complete matrix of every commodity in Wyoming that is taxable, all right? And across the other side of the matrix is what taxing jurisdiction that percent is. So that's really the beauty of this thing. This is the next logical step from what we've done on the streamlined sales tax effort nationwide. Was that, you know, they said the burden's too high for vendors back in 1992, but that has been removed now, but yet we haven't moved in the direction that we need to as far as taking the next step. Now, as far as the effective immediately, that I would urge you not to change that. You know, we checked with the department, and they can sell sales tax licenses right now and are up and willing. There's no, that's the kind of question I had, was is there a startup effort in this? And they say certainly not. We sell sales tax, and they sell sales tax licenses to a lot of out-of-state people already. But this is just going to hopefully bring about more. So that's all I have, I guess, at this point.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would just like to echo the sentiments brought forth by my colleague in District 3 that I'm not so sure that the language on line 2 or on page 2 regarding the transaction costs as well as the amount of transactions really dictate what we're trying to do here. So I would look forward to seeing what we can do about that in the future. But I also want to make sure that people understand this is not a new tax. This isn't something that we're bringing in here new that is going to be imposed. And this is something that we as citizens should have been doing through the use tax, as the Chairman of Minerals had mentioned previously. And I think that it's important to make that distinction, that we're not raising taxes here. One thing that I think is important to note as well is that we're bringing this tax and we're putting the onus back on industry as opposed to the consumer. We're allowing industry to come sell in our state, but we're taking a disadvantage right now by not having this law on books. We're taking, I believe there was a recent study that said, you know, $29 million that we're just allowing to just go completely uncollected right now. And I would venture to guess that there's very few of my colleagues and or constituents, anybody out there that's going down every month and writing a check to the Department of Revenue for all their information or all their online purchases that they're doing. So I'd like to make sure that we understand that in an economic downturn and we're looking for funding, we're not imposing new taxes. We're just trying to collect what's rightfully ours, and I think this is a fantastic motion forward. And, again, I'm in support of this. Thank you.
Chairman Madden, you wanted to talk about it?
Just one final thing. I just caution you to, on page 2, to not tinker too much with the $100,000 and the 200 transaction. And the reason for that is that these bills that have gone through other states have stuck with that, all right? And we asked that same question during the committee meeting in November. You know, how did they come up with this number? And it's really, it's been a number that I assume other states have studied and think, you know, they're satisfied that that's an appropriate level. It may, you know, when it gets through the court system and everything, that might change. But at least for now, we want to show that we're putting our best foot forward and we're not going to be picking on little ma-and-pa retailers with small numbers of transactions, and that's not our point. So that's what I got.
Representative Locks.
Mr. Speaker, yeah, I'd like also to echo what Chairman Madden just said concerning that. Let's don't get hung up in that figure. It is, as the principle of bill is what we really need to look at. And one other thing, there was a question a second ago concerning the food things. Trying to do this and not get personal about it, but a catalog that's produced for the company that I'm associated with a couple years ago all of a sudden had, you know, food products in there, break room food products, okay? And that's the first thing I thought of was, oh, my gosh, these can't be taxed in Wyoming. And the simple software program that I have, it was, as soon as that happened, it's integrated right in there. They aren't taxed. And that's just the way it works with the software programs. And it was, I was scared for it, and it was, but it was all in there. Period. Thank you very much,
Representative Gray.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Couple things here. I do think that the thresholds, we have to have a conversation about that. We're saying that we don't want to hurt mom and pop sellers, but 200 transactions. I mean, there's a cider company in the north of the state directly south of us that I probably transact with 30 to 40 times a year. It's a great cider company and great apple cider and five other people in this state that would do the same thing, and they're going to be subject to this bill. And I can tell you that they make some good cider, and a lot of people probably do transact with them. So I think the thresholds are very important. The other thing I would say is in response to the good representative from the county we're in now that just spoke, we really do have a spending problem. If you look, it doesn't matter whether you're adjusting for inflation or not. If you go back to 2000, the growth in spending in the state of Wyoming is enormous. And to frame our current fiscal problems as part of this bill, I think, is problematic. So that's my two comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just a question back to the good chairman as he was describing some things back to my good fellow legislator from the county of Tens. I was following you on this part of the matrix, but she lost me on this part of the matrix. Maybe you could. Yeah. I can get with you later on. Maybe I can get with him later on that.
Chairman Madden, you want to describe the up and down
verticals? Well, the only thing I can say is with the gentleman that just spoke is that he does need a picture. You know, he does a lot better when I pass a graph out. But all that meant on the vertical matrix, or you could say the horizontal one, but the vertical one, you've got different products, descriptions of products, like cowboy boots, all right? And then across the top, we have taxing jurisdictions. And if you go to the county in the northwest part of the state, they have a different tax rate than the southeast part of the state. So it just all it does is, you know, you just hit the right button and you got her.
Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to speak on and for this. I think it would be a big mistake to forego the potential revenue here, regardless of where you come down on this and that, of what the financial situation is now. So I'm on and for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for the great discussion on the bill. Question's been called. All those in favor of Representative Madden's motion that the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so the recommendation that House Bill number 19 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, nay. House Bill number 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division? Did I hear it? Okay. Yes? All right, division's been called. All those in favor, please stand. With a count of 48, House Bill number 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to shuffle the bills a little bit here, move House Bill 63 to the bottom of the list, and sensing the body wants to do one more bill before lunch.
Yes.
Okay, House Bill 7 is going to be the next bill, and that'll be our final bill.
Thank you. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 7. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 7, Credit for Reinsurance, sponsored by corporations, elections, and political subdivisions, an act relating to insurance. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 7, Credit for Reinsurance, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Zwanitzer Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 7 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment. I will turn over the bill and the amendment to the good legislator who's number one in your district's number one in your heart.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I'm still looking. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill number 7, Credit for Reinsurance. I'm just going to kind of give you the broad brush. As you can tell, there's some weight to this. And, yes, it is an insurance bill with accreditation standards attached. So hence why you're seeing the credit for reinsurance. House Bill number 7, be on. This bill deals with reinsurance, which is insurance for insurance companies. This bill is a model law and reduces the amount of collateral non-U.S. reinsurers have to maintain if they meet certain criteria. Currently, non-U.S. reinsurers have to post 100% collateral in order to cover the liabilities ceded to them by insurers. Under this revised model, certified reinsurers are allowed to reduce the amount of collateral they hold based on their financial strength and whether they are domiciled and licensed in a qualified jurisdiction as determined by insurance regulators here in the U.S. This has become an international trade issue, so it's important to adopt this model so that our domestic insurers will have access to affordable reinsurance, which will in turn help domestic insurance keep their premium rates lower for consumers. Currently, 35 states have adopted this revised model, and the model is going to be an accreditation standard very quickly. It is important that Department of Insurance maintain its accreditation so other states can rely on the insurance department's financial solvency, regulation, and financial examinations. If the department was to lose its accreditation, it would subject our Wyoming domestic insurers to additional financial examinations and regulation in other states where they are licensed. I'm going to just quickly cover this standing committee amendment real quick, and we'll get through it. So on page 19, after line 15, we insert credit for reinsurance ceded to a certified reinsurer is limited to reinsurance contracts entered or renewed on or after the effective date of the certification of the assuming insurer by the commissioner. This language is being adopted by this model law, the state to the that's a Dakota state and is to the north. Was one of the original ones to bring it, and now it's becoming model law with the rest of those 35 states that have passed this. So I'll stand for the question on the specific standing committee amendment, and then I'll go through the bill some more.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment, and you have asked for the question. Question being called, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We've passed the standing committee amendment. We're back on the bill. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So back to the accreditation standards, and this is just insurance for insurers, and it has a lot to do with the fact. So if a small insurer here locally takes out a large policy for you because of a certain event that a major organization is throwing, and that small organization can't hold that much in liquidity, they can take out insurance to back themselves up, and then it's slowly paid, then if it was needed, then as the insurance was used, it would be stepped back and back, just like banking regulation, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'm going to stand for any questions on this piece of legislation.
Question being called. All those in favor? Oh, let me get there. All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman's Wanitzer's motion, the Committee of the Whole Rises report, do so the recommendation that Bill number 67 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? So be it. Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as files. House Bill 71, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 16, recommended do pass. House Bill 17, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 6, recommended do pass. House Bill 43, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 20, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 19, recommended do pass. House Bill 7, amended, recommended do pass.
I've heard the motion of the Committee of the Whole report. Or I move.
Adopt.
to adopt the committee of the whole report. Excuse
You've
me.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The committee of the whole report has been adopted. Congratulations. We have, before we go to committee announcements, we're at the order of business. We have one standing committee report. Reading clerk will read the report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 11, Discounted Cash Flow Implementation Process, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommended that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Kenner, Madden, Overmuller, Paxton, Noes, Hallinan, Larson, Chairman Madden.
Okay, committee announcements. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Education Number 4, will meet in House 38, where we'll go over House Bills 8 and 9. That'll be upon adjournment. Also, I'd like to remind everybody that we're going to have an informational meeting on Monday, January 16th at 1 p.m. in L54. We'd like to see almost everybody that can make it go to it. It'll be good to hear what they have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10 will meet today, 10 minutes upon recess, or adjournment, thank you, I hope, to consider House Bill 83, Healthcare Facilities Licensing. We will also meet on Monday to hear House upon adjournment how to hear House Bill 112. And I would like to also mention to my committee and other committees, there's box lunches available down the hall. So if you want to pick up a box lunch and come to committee room, that would be appreciated. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Chairman. And I'm sure that will be adjournment. So, Chairman Madden.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Revenue number 3 will be meeting Monday morning in their same room, number 36, at 8 o'clock a.m. We'll be talking about House Bill 11, House Bill 10, Oil and Gas Reporting. And then we'll talk about House Bill 12, which is Excise Tax Repeals. Thank you.
Okay, Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me follow up first on Chairman Barlow's announcement. There is lunch for everyone in L51 brought to you courtesy of a large group of insurance companies in the state. It's from Piccolo Venti. If you have a committee meeting, they have box lunch for you. Otherwise, please stay and hang out. In other news, how Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Monday upon noon recess in H37 to hear House Bill 21, House Bill 22, House Bill 23, all of which deal with the Secretary of State's office, as well as House Bill 103 on housing authority.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Looking ahead to Monday, 10 minutes after the noon recess, the Judiciary Committee Number 1 will meet to consider three bills, House Joint Resolution 2, the Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, House Joint Resolution 3, the Single Subject Amendment Resolution, and House Bill 50, Limitations on Delegates, Constitution Amendment Conventions.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife, will meet Monday in H38 at 8 o'clock, and we will consider House Bill 30, State Parks and Sites Fees, and House Bill 33, Non-Resident Motorboats, Gasoline Tax Distribution.
Any other announcements?
Look around.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet Tuesday upon adjournment in H37 to talk about vehicle registrations.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The JAC will meet at noon today to continue that's the joint JAC. And we also meet at 8:30. It wasn't being at 8 o'clock, it'll now be 8:30 on Monday. and at noon recess on Monday to continue the agency reviews. And we're actually going to have a Craig report, if anyone wants to get a quick update on that, at 8:30 in JAC. And also there will be an education report following that. On Monday at adjournment, the House Appropriations will meet. We'll be considering House Bill 45, 59, 79, and 55, and re-referrals House Bill 31 and 26.
Chairman Greer.
Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased, I guess, to announce that your Minerals Committee will not meet Monday morning. We only have one bill in the hopper, so we will not meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock, which is our usual time. If need be, we'll just go a little longer on Wednesday and Friday.
Okay, one announcement on Rules Committee. The Rules Committee number 12 will meet Monday, January 16th at 8 a.m. in room L54. The committee will first meet jointly with the Senate Rules Committee to discuss joint rule changes. I would guess that that meeting would last a half hour, and then we will divide, and then at 8:30-ish, when the work is finished, we will divide into our separate House and Senate Rules Committee, and your House Rules Committee will stay in L54 and consider the following Management Council bills: House Bill 35, sponsorship of legislation, and House Bill 36, obsolete laws. And then at that time, we will vote on the House rules. As you recall, the first day we adopted the rules of the last session as temporary rules, and we have 5 days then to vote on our permanent rules. So I'd tell members, if you have any suggested rule changes, it'd be like any other bill, visit LSO, have them draft up the specific proposed rule change that you would like, and then come present it to the Rules Committee on Monday. Okay? So with that, I think that clears the deck. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Monday, January 16th, 2017.
You have heard the Majority Floor Leader's motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? No. Motion has been adopted. Have a great weekend.